I'm Chase.
And I'm Timothy.
And this is Customer Service.
Afternoon, big fella.
Quando Brando, my boy.
Yeah, flub the intro again. We'll just be up front.
So we're restarting it?
Yeah.
Killer guest.
Awesome guest today. We have wanted him on since the inception of the podcast. He was on our first list of people to reach out to. He had like a kind of a, one of his videos go viral. I got past it by no short of 20 people that I know independently being like, this is so funny and so specific. Yeah. And, you know, I think so many people had that reaction to his initial videos of like, this guy gets it. He knows knows our super small community, but it's a lot of people had the super small community. You know what I mean? And it just resonated with so many people. And he's just so good at being funny. So today we have really excited to say that we have Stanley Sievers finally on the podcast.
Yes.
So this is really fun. You might know him. Stanley WS is his handle on Instagram. Yeah. He is the
Mosh guy.
Mosh guy.
Mosh
retirement guy. Dush guy. that's what we first saw. And then literally everything that's come out since, Chase and I, like I usually, he or I will come in and say, there's a new one. There's a new one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we watch it together because we just think it's so funny. And it's just like the kind of comedy that I think we both grew up with, which is like this blend of really smart, insightful, almost voyeuristic view into like regular people. You know what I mean?
And, but like and, building
and,
a character.
And then expanding it like into this whole universe. And then also with, blended with this like really funny physical comedy. Yeah. It's just we think the world of him. I think I really hope he blows up even more. But he's got so many cool things coming.
Yeah.
He's got his, you know, Mosh Guy mockumentary coming out really soon. We'll make sure when it comes out, we'll link it and everything.
Just so we've said, and he says it in the pod, but I believe mid-May is what he's
shooting
for.
That's the plan. So, so that's coming out. He's got, obviously, you know, his Instagram and TikTok and all that, which we shout out. And then he's actually going to be on a new series that he kind of alludes to that'll be really fun. We're really excited.
He's getting a lot of love.
Yeah, we love
and
to see
I'm
it.
I'm really stoked. Yeah.
So this was a conversation we were excited to have. It was really fun. Obviously, we talk about hardcore and comedy and all the stuff we love. So it was a really fun one. So let's get right into it.
Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Kentucky originally.
Oh shit, what part?
Lexington.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So we're both from the Midwest. I'm from Indiana and Chase is from Ohio.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I played in like, how we probably know you, I played in like hardcore bands and stuff, and I played in like Louisville and Lexington and shit a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I did my old band was called Dead Icons, and we played Midwest a lot.
Too.
Yeah, and then I also toured in this band called Call the Preserve. They're like a face down, straight edge band.
Yeah. Oh man, Dead Icons though, that sounds really familiar. I feel like that there, and that's the thing too. If you were in like a certain area, there's no way it didn't cross paths at some point, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's during when we were like touring from Kentucky, there was like not, I think we were like the only, like we were maybe one of the only modern like hardcore bands like in Kentucky that was like touring at the time. Like, it did not, I mean, the scene, like Louisville had a decent scene, but Lexington's scene was like fine. And it just kind of like maybe one of the only bands like from Kentucky that was like touring. And then the scene there got way better.
Yeah, it's weird how like it sounds so dumb, but like how diverse like the types of bands from like different areas in the Midwest were. Because the stuff that like Chase grew up with in Ohio, which had a good scene, and the stuff that I had in Indiana was like we got like spillover from Ohio or like, you know, Illinois, Chicago. Mm-hmm. But then you also had like the really hardcore guys from like Southern Indiana. But then it was also like kind of Christian a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like it was just like a lot of like it depended on the area, but I could hear the band. I think you could play me a certain bands from that time period. Yeah. Be like, oh, I know where they're from. I could tell just by the way they're doing things.
Chase, where in Ohio are you from?
So I'm from, I say Cleveland because it's easier, but I'm from like a small town called Ashtabula, which also had like a DIY venue and shit that for 4 or 5 years that bands would come through. But yeah, Cleveland more or less.
Dude, I've played Cleveland so many times.
Where would you play? Now That's Class? Grog Shop?
Now That's Class, Grog Shop. Sorry. I just ate like a ton of pasta. So.
Hell yeah, carbo load, baby.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the place that I went to whenever, but it's like my favorite place near me. But
hell yeah.
Anyway, we played Now That's Class a lot.
Yeah,
we played with that band Search Block.
Oh, bro,
bit.
I loved Search Block. I had a Search Block hoodie that I grew out of and gave to my weightlifting friend, but had the X bats on the hood, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Heavy as fuck.
We did Search Block. There's other bands in Cleveland, but yeah, I mean, I'm like, I always love Cleveland hardcore. Like, I don't really know. Integrity was from there at some point, right? Or like,
Integrity, yeah. Dwid, and that whole crew's from Cleveland. And in fact, I saw the most violent show I've ever been to, far, far and away, was the Integrity show that happened in Cleveland that they never said would, at the Grog Shop. It was like Integrity, Suburban Scum. A lot of bands in that room.
Yeah, that's rough. That's a rough one.
Yeah, and like there was like a crew from Cleveland, SOSF, and I watched them just whoop on a bunch of kids.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. You get it. So.
Yeah, I'm familiar with like the SOSF Courage Crew, all that stuff in that area.
I also went to Kent, and like SOSF started in Kent. Like, there's a tattoo shop in Kent, where that was like the hub. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But sick, dude. Yeah, Cleveland was tight. I'm really fortunate to have experienced all that. I look back really fondly on it.
Yeah, man. We always had good shows in Cleveland. We would play Ohio quite a bit. Like, obviously Cincinnati, since it's so close, but Cleveland was always like, Cleveland and Dayton, we played quite a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's rough shows in Cleveland for sure.
It definitely was wild at times. I mean, I can think back to like a lot of my friends have gotten, you know, kind of taken out of Now That's Class, and albeit we were 16, 17, 18 year olds getting whooped on by full grown men, but
yes, yeah.
You know, probably the direct inspo for your bits, which we know and love. But
I mean, like, that's it. I think that, like, in the same way, I mean, unfortunately, like, Illinois had like not the coolest. It was more like you started to get pretty punky then. But like, I liked that. Like, I think Cleveland had the same thing where you get like the Midwest stuff and its own thing, but you also get like a lot of the East Coast bands because it's close enough. Mm-hmm. So you get like, it would always be like a good mix of different, you know, influences.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also really liked, I think that area and that era of hardcore is like, obviously I grew up there, but like the metallic hardcore is like kind of my favorite, like,
same.
Like Integrity and stuff like that. Like, I never really got into like, I really honestly never got into punk at all. I just like skipped it completely. Like,
me either, man.
I never really listened to like Pennywise or anything like that. I just was like straight up like got into hardcore through nu metal. And then it was like metallic hardcore from then on. So like, but I feel like at that time, I don't know, maybe it was different for you guys, but at that time, there was like a weird split happening between like people that played, it was like metallic hardcore and stuff more like beat down hardcore, like heavy hardcore.
100%.
And then like cool hardcore, which was like, you know, whatever, like bands that were like, it was more like Youth Crew or stuff like that. And like, it was like the heavier hardcore was like not as cool at the time. Like, now it's like the biggest thing. But for a while it was like, if you weren't on a certain label or your band didn't sound a certain way, you were kind of just like basically fucked. Like,
yeah, it was Youth Crew was what was approved at that period in time.
Totally.
That was like the in click, you know what I
mean?
Yeah,
like the Meathead shit was like, no, people were like, whoa, you like that kind of hardcore, and you were like relegated to a certain like dark corner of like hardcore, you know? So like,
yeah,
I spent all my time touring. Also, like when we were touring, like, people don't realize, like, I think how good they have it now as far as touring goes, and the way that all the different hardcore types of hardcore can like mesh together. Because like, I think my band was like a metallic hardcore band, like thrashy and stuff. And I think that we were doing that at a time when it was like not cool to be doing that at all. Like, it was like, and it was also at a time when if you weren't on a specific label, like if you weren't on Bridge Nine or Reaper or whatever, you were basically not a hardcore band. Like, and now you can kind of be on any label you want and it really doesn't matter. But so we like sort of an unfortunate time to be like a heavy hardcore band. But then it's like, I feel like after we stopped touring was when it like started becoming cool. And it's like, oh great, this is awesome.
When I talk to like younger people now about like that stuff, it is not, like, you're exactly right, it is not segregated the way it was before. Cause like, I played in bands that were definitely, you know, cause I grew up with more, like you're saying, like I was into nu metal a little bit. And then I liked like classic, like, you know, especially like, you know, grimier like metal, like Entombed and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And so we were always trying to do that kind of sound, but just to basically hardcore beats because you only knew like one kid who could do that, those drum beats. And so it was basically just that with hardcore beats. So they didn't know where to put you. So you'd get put on a show and it would be like, we'd show up and be like, fuck, it's all straight edge guys tonight. You know, like no one's going to like us. They're going to be mad at us. Or in where I'm from, you'd get put on like a religious like bill and it would be like, oh no, they're going to know right away and they're going to hate us.
Yeah.
And then they would really like push against you and they like, you know, yell. It was such a nightmare. Or like you're saying, like some other crew from somewhere else would show up and you'd be like, hey, just a heads up, those guys from like Southside are there. And you're like, oh great. Okay, cool. So no one's going to like us. Everyone's going to be mean as fuck.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's going to be a bad show all because of these like weird benign rules that I don't know who set. So,
which like, and it's weird now because like being, you know, I'm 32 and like I'll see a lot of the whatever discourse and stuff that people argue about constantly, like about like hardcore and stuff like that. And it's like having been removed from it, like obviously I've been in the scene for a long time, but now being older, it's like, this stuff really, like none of this stuff like really matters. Like, you know, it's like,
not at all.
Like it really does not matter at all. And in fact, like these are such like minuscule, like nitpicky things of differences in bands. It's like to an outsider, this whole music sounds like this sounds the same as Mudvayne. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 100%.
It really does not matter at all. And in fact, it's like one of the reasons why I started making videos is because I just always found it to be like funny. That people take it so serious, and it's like obviously I take it serious. I toured in bands, and it's been a huge part of my life, like ever since I can remember. But I think now I have like a perspective where it's like I don't take it as serious as I did, like all the weird minuscule like dramas and beefs and this and that. It's like, dude, this is exhausting. Like,
completely agree.
I think you went down the right route with it. I remember at one point, this would have been like a while ago, like 10 years ago, when podcasting was still really new, me and my now brother-in-law had this idea. We're like, you know what would be funny is like to just have like a podcast where we talked about old scene drama. And we did one episode like after like having a few beers, we're like, this will be funny. And we started talking about it and I'm like, this isn't funny. It's not funny at all. It's so dorky and specific and annoying. And I was like, nobody would like this.
Yeah.
So you took the right approach to go, we'll just make fun of these guys as a whole unit. And because it's so dumb.
He kept crowding my space during that two-step part. So I had to kick his fucking ass.
It was a lot of eight guys liked the one girl at the show and they all thought they would date her and she didn't like any of us. And it was like that. It was just so dumb and it just wasn't funny. And we'd never went back to it. We've never even talked about it again. So I think you went down the right route here looking at it is like, 'cause there is some kind of like funny immaturity to it that I think you've been able to capture that like I don't think many people have like glommed onto. Like that's the part that's funny about the whole thing.
Also, I found that like the people that I've been doing it long enough where I'll get like haters and stuff now, and I find that like it's always people that are in like their early 20s. And it's like I remember what that felt like to be like, oh, this is like an extremely serious thing. And you know, how can you, first of all, it's like, there's like that thing where people just don't like seeing people like enjoy things.
They're having fun.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, I get to the point where I'll see like some of the people that are like hating on me or whatever sometimes. And I'm like, I think that you should like, it's totally fine to not like me or not think I'm funny or whatever, but I'm like, I just can't imagine having enough time or like, or perhaps like maybe just not touching grass enough to like really be this upset and really be like, this guy's ruining the whatever and blah, 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 blah. It's like, dude, I remember what it felt like to be you at like 20 something. And I'm just telling you like to wait and I promise you, you will not care about this at all. And I don't know.
Well, and I think that like what would be frustrating about that is the only way you could do the bits that you're doing is by knowing so specifically and intimately the types of people that are at those shows to be able to do the jokes you're doing. Because that's the reason, in my opinion, they work is like, oh, I know exactly the guy he's doing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so it's like, in a way, it should be like you should look at it as like a celebration of that thing. But I mean, you're right. It's like I remember how like seriously because. It's a weird thing to deal with.
You're looking
for
something that matters at
that
point.
Yeah, I loved
it
so much, and it was so important to, like, you know, I really felt like I found my people, and I liked how, well, I don't know, always, but in some cases, it was very welcoming and, like, mm-hmm. cool, mm-hmm. and I really meant a lot to me. It, like, formed how I do things now, in, you know, all these, it informed all this long-term stuff for me, but at the same time, it's like, it was also dumb as hell, you know what I mean, in other ways, so it's like a tough thing to deal with.
And once you first get into hardcore, you think that like you, like maybe you've had a different experience than me, but it's like, and I felt this way too, where it's like, yes, I found my people. This is great. These people are better than all the other people out there, blah, 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 blah. And then after you're in it for a long time, you realize that these people have the same problems that every other person that I've ever encountered mm-hmm. in my life does. Like, there are the same types of like interpersonal, you know, drama or whatever. And yes, it is better to a certain extent than like high school or whatever, but there are still the same weird hierarchical stuff and people caring about things that they don't, or, you know, people thinking they're too cool for something mm-hmm. or whatever. Like these same societal and like, you know, interpersonal issues are happening in this scene. And just because you like the same music as someone else does not mean you're aligned with them on like morals or things sure. that you personally care about, or like, you know, the way you look at life or treat people or whatever. So I think after a while, like when you've been in it for a long time, you sort of realize like, oh, this scene has the exact same problems as everything else in life. And you just have to like, I do think it's better, but you do have to acknowledge that and like be like, okay, this is like, I don't have like rose colored glasses, you know, I'm not looking at it through like a lens that's like, this is perfect anymore, you know. It's like, yeah, you know, after a while you just realize that it's the same as everything else. And while I do think it's better, it's not without its own issues that are specific to that world.
Yeah,
it's like it didn't really dawn on me till later that I think I so badly didn't want to participate in all the shit that you're talking about that was happening in like regular high school, and I didn't because I found this like scene of people that were like so anti that, and then you realize like with a little bit of distance from it, you're like, oh no, I just started participating in the same shit just in a scene outside of high school, but it's like exactly. literally identical. Yeah,
but yeah, exactly. Like people like fighting over, I guess the word for it is now clout or whatever, but yeah. you know, like that word didn't exist then or whatever. So it's like people fighting over things that it's like, no one here is like making money from this or anything like that. Like why?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Who cares?
This person isn't like, who cares? Like, it's not that I'm saying like attaching money, like monetary value to anything makes it like good or, you know, worth it, worthwhile. But I'm just saying it's like, everyone is fighting over something that is, it's like Wi-Fi. It's like in the air and you don't, it like doesn't exist really. Like,
well, and I guess I just didn't realize I felt so, because there's so much like, kind of like you're saying, like these weird like moral rules and stuff attached to all these things, whether it's like having none or having a ton of them. And I guess I didn't realize until like, because I liked like producing music and working with people and more in like a recording setting, that I started working with like, you know, like post-hardcore and post-rock and then alternative. And then it was like, oh, I guess I didn't realize that I don't actually care as much about the moral stuff as everyone else. Cause I was like, I don't really care what anybody does. And I guess I just thought I did for so long and I didn't until it's like just like high school. You need a distance from it to realize that a lot of this is goofy.
Yeah. Totally. Stanley, are you still straight edge?
No, I guess according to my wife, I'm straight edge, but, I don't really smoke weed ever. I don't really drink almost ever. I've never smoked a cigarette. I've I've only the most, the hardest drug I've ever tried is I did a dab one time and it was like the worst, like six hours of my life.
That's a rough start.
Yeah. I did a dab and I did it when I was like working for a band on Warped Tour and I was like, this is terrible. And,
just a I was lot
like,
of
I remember
terrible.
Feeling like I would do anything to not be, I was like, I'd pay $1,000 to not be high anymore.
Yeah.
Did a dab. And then I never did it ever again.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I don't really drink. I might have a beer like every now and then, maybe if it feels like the kind of beverage I'd like to drink at that time.
Sure.
But I'm usually just like a soda water guy, like, you know, but I also have plenty of people in my life that have had problems with substances and whatnot. And I think that I've carried, I owe a lot to being straight edge. I still feel like in my mind, I don't claim it, but I feel like I live those values pretty consistently in my life. So yeah, I guess I would,
yeah,
in my mind I'm still straight edge, but I know that I'm not technically straight edge because I would drink a beer later tonight if I really wanted to, but I very rarely would have two.
I feel you. I was very straight edge also for a long, long time. I definitely smoke a lot of weed and I'll have beers here and there too, but I agree with the sentiment of like during that period of time where I was straight edge for like 6 or 7 years, same thing with my family. I have like a lot of like very addictive personality traits in my family, and I think had I not been straight edge at that time, I would have went too fucking wild. I would have had no grounding thing to keep me, you know, showing up to school or work or whatever was. But I agree with you. I really identify with that.
I respect it and like love it. And I love the like dedication and, you know, everything about it. But like it got to be the point where it was like, it was just so it turned into a religion, I think, at a certain point. And that's where it lost me a little bit. But then I think also then I turned 30 and was like, I'll just be straight edge again because I can't. You know what I mean? I can't do it anymore because it's killing me. Like even if I have a beer now, it's like, well, I need to go to bed for 2 days and then I'll be back to normal. So honestly, it's like voluntary.
I had spent like months like not drinking at all. Like basically COVID completely killed my desire to drink at all. I don't know what it was, but just after that I was like, I had a complete distaste for it, you know, whatever. I'm only just now starting to have a beer every now and then if it's a beer that I maybe like or whatever. But I don't really care for it. And it's not that I'm like, I'm not going to fucking drink, blah, blah, blah. It's just like most of the time it just does not sound good to me. Like I will just have whatever sounds good to me in the moment. Like maybe if we're out at dinner, I might have a glass of wine, maybe not like, you know, but once it became a thing where it's like, I'm going to do this because, you know, and I don't have any hate for people that do because I get it. But once it became a thing, like you were saying, where it was like, oh, this feels like a religion and I'm being like held to something that, you know, I don't feel like I'm at risk of like going off the deep end on it. So, you know, whatever, I sort of strayed away from it, but.
So Stanley, at what point do you get into comedy and stuff like that? Was that always something you were interested in? Or did that hit you later on in life?
So I've always been interested in comedy, but I never was interested in like really doing it. I think I used to just watch like all the. Like the whole time I was like growing up and touring or whatever, I would always watch on Fridays, like the Comedy Central, like stand up specials, like the 30 minute specials. They'd play those like all night. So I'd watch all those like religiously, like every Friday.
Yep.
And I always really loved comedy. I'd always like watching like the IFC, like indie comedies and stuff like that. But after I stopped touring, I was kind of like, looking for the next thing, and I was always interested in filmmaking as well. And so I made a couple short films like in Kentucky. And then I was like, well, I think I've used every actor that lives here. so I'm going to move to Chicago and I'm going to take some improv classes to meet people because I'd known about like SNL and I knew about IO and Second City. So I took classes there. I did the program at like IO Chicago, which is like, and then I did some classes at Second City. I did the Annoyance Theater, which is like the one that I really like the most. People don't really hear about that one.
It's great. I lived in Chicago for a really long time.
Oh, so. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of stuff at Annoyance, which was kind of like my place. And I ended up really liking improv and performing. So I did that a lot. And I was making my own like films and sketches and whatnot while I was there. and doing like solo character work, like, you know, like I guess not stand up, but I would be doing stand up as like by myself on a stage or whatever at a show doing characters. So I kind of just fell into it by accident, like doing comedy, because I didn't really realize like improv was like a thing. And then I just did that. I mean, I did as much of it as I could. And I was in Chicago for a long time. And then, eventually I just kind of realized I didn't really want to do any of the things that Chicago had to offer as far as like comedy, like jobs. So,
It's so
my wife and I,
specific there.
yeah, it's like, and I didn't really like, there was like a touring company at Second City that everyone tries to get on. And like, I was like, I've been touring for years. Like, I don't care about doing this. I don't care about like traveling to a random college in like Idaho or whatever the fuck to like do sketch comedy. Like, I've like toured everywhere. It's not interesting to me. I don't care about like getting a job on like a cruise ship doing like sketch comedy, like, you know, for like 8 months. Like, I'd rather like blow my brains out than being a cruise ship that long.
Agreed.
So I was
Throwdown
like, I
doesn't
just
have a
don't.
cruise ship. They want to have you come on for
Yeah,
one.
exactly. So I was kind of just like, I don't really care about any of these jobs, and I didn't really care about doing like the like main stage or whatever at Second City. I was like, I want to like do TV and film. So I've always wanted to do that. So that's kind of like what I wanted to focus on. Moved to New York. We were there for 2 years. COVID happened. Moved to Richmond, Virginia for 2 years, and then we moved out here. And so out here is when things started like picking up after like almost 10 years of doing things.
Grinding. Where in Chicago did you live?
I lived in Lakeview, like actually really
Okay.
close to the Annoyance.
Yeah.
I could walk to it. But yeah, I pretty much lived in Lakeview the whole time. Thinking about how much I paid for rent in Lakeview was insane. I lived in like a 5-bedroom apartment with like 4 other people. There's like 3 bathrooms, like 3 living rooms.
We can't go down this road. Because we live
Dude.
in Boulder, and it's like it's much like New York or LA here in this specific area. And I thought when I moved out here, when I got asked to like help open this up with my business partner, I was like, oh yeah, Colorado, okay. Like I'm open to like not being in a city for the first time because it'll be like inexpensive. We'll buy like a house, we'll do the whole thing. And then I got out here, I'm like, oh shit, it's way worse. Cause I was like, the first place I ever lived in was in Bucktown before it got big. And it was, I lived in a 3-bedroom apartment that had a garage and a backyard and a deck. And I think there was even another bedroom that was like a half bedroom because it didn't have, I mean, it was an insane amount of space that I'm never going to get back for like, I think I paid like, you know, like $1,700 or something like that. It was something demented. And like the second we moved out, because we got paid to move out, they built like a, you know, one of those 4-story things, you know, over there as it got really popular. But yeah, I do miss the rent there so much.
Dude, yeah, I only paid like $650 a month for my room, and it was like huge. It was the biggest room I've ever lived in, and yeah, I definitely miss it at times. But I would not rather live anywhere else than here. We actually thought about moving back to Chicago recently, but I booked like a recurring on a TV show.
Oh, sick.
I can't say what it is
Well,
until it comes
congratulations. Yeah,
out.
congrats, man. That's
Thanks.
fucking sick.
So I don't know how many episodes I'm going to be in because I'm like just a co-star. But I've already done one episode. I just finished it yesterday, and then as the months go on, this season ends in August. Like I'll find out how many episodes I'm in or whatever as they need me. But we thought about moving back to Chicago because there's still like acting and stuff there. And my manager for TV and film was like, hey, he's like, I don't really care where you live as long as you can travel for jobs. And but then I booked this and was like, all right, well, shit, I guess we're staying here for a while. So,
Dude, I
yeah,
love
I'll.
Chicago, but it would be hard to go back to the weather now being west.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was my first
Yeah.
thought.
Yeah. I mean, I love it here. It sucks that I'm so far away from family, but like, it's my favorite place I've ever lived is by far LA.
Yeah, we it's like we get more like seasons here than LA, but it's like dry and
Mild.
sunny like 300 something days of the year, so it's
Yeah.
really great. I can't imagine going back to the Midwest as much as I love it and miss it.
Yeah,
So
it's.
like wh so what what when does the when do the when do the mosh videos start? Like when does that happen? And was it like a real intentional thing, or was it like kind of just doing a
Kind
fun
of
thing
struck
that
gold.
got that blew up?
Yeah, so it's really weird. Like, I've been doing stuff on social media since t like COVID, like, 'cause I couldn't perform anymore, and I was living in Richmond where there was very little comedy stuff going on. And I'd used to performing a lot in New York where we lived. So I was just like, I'm just going to get, my wife was like, you should get on TikTok. And I was like, I'm just going to get on. And I was making videos like 3 or 4 times a day, just to see. So I was like, oh, that got 400 views. That got 300 views or whatever. And then, you know, slowly started getting things that would hit like every now and then. And then I did a series about like having a witchy wife for a while. that like, that really blew up. Like that is what got me like all the followers basically. Which is like, I don't, you know, whatever. I don't really have that many compared to like a lot of other people, you know, as far as like, I have like 170,000 or something on TikTok, but that's kind of like what blew up initially. And then I did that series for a while and I kind of burnt myself out on it. And from that I learned like, okay, like I need to do things that I think are funny and that I like. And cause I still thought that series was funny, but I was kind of ended up doing it more for like the people that liked it a lot. Never really like a recipe for success that way. And so then once we moved here, I was excited to be around like, cause all my best friends live here that I used to collaborate with in Chicago a lot, like as far as comedy goes. And I was like, oh, I want to make like some videos or whatever, like sketches and like characters, like I've been doing on stage or like, you know, in other ways. And so I would just write stuff and have my friend come and film me. And honestly, I just made the first like Mosh Retirement Guy just to make like the few people that I knew from touring laugh. Like I was like, there's no way this is gonna like, you know, I didn't think about it at all. Like it was not intentional, whatever. And I made it, and then it was like, it went like insane, which was
like immediately, or did it take a minute?
Dude, it was like immediate. The first video, like, was, I went from like having like 1,000 followers on Instagram to like over 10,000 followers, basically. Like with the first video, I was like, "What the like hell is going on?"
It and just, like, it's so specific, but in the best way. Do you know what I mean? I think that anymore, like that's the best comedy at this point.
Yeah, and that's what I've really learned from it is like it really gave me permission to make like the kind of specific things that I think are funny. Make like those characters, and even if they don't always like do extremely well, like I'm still happy with what I'm making. And eventually that first Mosh Retirement Guy is what started the process of me getting a manager, because like someone sent it to him because he used to tour in bands. So it's like, so he used to tour in bands, someone sent it to him, and then I made another video that someone sent to him, and then he was like, oh shit, like I should check this guy out. And then so from there we met, and like he's the first time I've ever had a rep as far as like being an actor goes, like, and I just got it, like I just started working with him like right before the actor strikes like last year. So, you know, yeah, I mean that video, I owe a lot to that character because it kind of like allowed me to start doing things that I wanted to do for like 10 years. And it's weird. It was not intentional at all. And yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just, now that I'm thinking about it, I've been doing that. Like it's been a while since I made that first video. And I have definitely, there's definitely times where I feel like I've fell into the trap of like what I learned, what I did with like the last series that blew up on TikTok, which was like, I've made some time like videos like for the people that like what I thought that they wanted from it, because it's a weird place. Like once you start making things that people really like, then you have that in your mind where you're like, oh, people want this, or, you know, they want this for me or whatever. Like, and so I do that. And then I feel like there are times where I've like lost my way a little bit. And then I feel like I'm really finding it again now. So I don't know. I guess I haven't really even thought. These are just now speaking these like words out, like as like reflecting about it.
Do you think like maybe this is too much behind the veil? So tell me if it is. And you don't have to answer. Was it written, or is it just you doing improv?
It was like 85% written, maybe. So I write like lines, and then I always find things like on the spot. So I would write like things that I think are funny or whatever. And the way I do things now is I'll write like 4 or 5 characters at once, and then I'll go shoot them all in one day, and then just change outfits. But yeah, it's mostly written, and then I will find things like improvise. A lot of the physical stuff is improvised too, like because I've always been really into like physical comedy. Like I really like Ace Ventura and stuff like that.
100%. Yeah.
Dumb and Dumber or whatever.
Yeah.
And being physical was like always a huge part of me, like doing improv, like performing, because I always found that it was like I always, I don't know, I was never. I realized that I was never like the most clever as far as like jokes go, like writing jokes or whatever, but I just knew, like, I feel like I knew how to make someone laugh or knew what I was funny just physically. And I don't know. That's something that's always helped me. And one of the reasons it's helped me book this thing I just recently booked, like on the self-tape I sent, I think like some of the things I did, they really liked because of that. And like what they've been having me do on the show is very like, in that vein, like some physical stuff like here and there. So yeah, I mean, it is, I guess I kind of got off topic, but yeah, a lot of it's pretty much written.
It's funny that you bring up the physical nature of it, because we were just talking right before we got on, and I think I've grown up really into sketch comedy and stuff like that. And then obviously moving to Chicago only amplified all that interest, seeing it live and things like that. But I grew up on like SNL and everything. And certain people are just able to capture a physicality that as soon as you enter the frame, it's like, God damn it, it's already funny.
Just because
it's
just, walking,
there's just like, I mean, that was the first thing I noticed in the Mosh videos, is like, I know the guy just by the way he's moving. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, obviously, you've picked up on that. And like, how, I guess what I'm trying to get at, only because I love comedy so much, but I've never participated inside of it other than viewing it. And like, is it like, how do you, like, what informs, I know you're not doing an impression, but I guess maybe it starts as an impression of like a guy, you know what I mean? And then you build the character around it to a certain degree. But like, what informs all that stuff? Is it just natural, or is it like, are you kind of like really like, do you feel like you're like a good voyeur of other people and how they like move and like, it's not how written it is, but how much is it just like a feel thing?
A lot of it is feel. I think it's like how this thing feels to me. And a lot of it comes from like in Chicago doing improv, I learned primarily the annoyance, which is like, we do these like exercises and like performing a lot too, where it's like, I just like I would walk into a scene with a feeling or like maybe a physicality or primarily sometimes a feeling or a vibe or like a point of view, they would call it like, and I just sort of like find what that means as it goes along. So, like I may not even know what I'm going to say, but I know, like, I just feel like I know the character or like the person or how they like move or whatever. So a lot of it pretty much starts like physical for me, even like when I'm writing stuff too. I think like I was writing something earlier, like by writing, I mean, like I had an idea.
Yeah.
And so maybe like this will come out, but I'll make this video at some point, but like, I had like this idea of like asking someone, like a guy you ask for directions on the side of the road and you just like can't. I made a video about a guy you can't understand, like recently.
The mechanics guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when you're pointing at the hood.
Yeah.
Just so
but funny. I have like an idea for another similar kind of character where it's like a guy that you ask for directions and like they just can't give you directions. But like, I'm, in my mind, like I don't even know what he's going to say, but in my mind, he's just like, he just has like this like weird, like the way his voice sounds. And then from there on, he just, I don't know. I just kind of start there. And then a lot of times when I was performing or doing shows, like I was on a team of people at IO, like I was on a Herald team there. That doesn't mean anything to anybody besides people that live in Chicago.
And I know. But,
But I ended up playing I played a lot of characters that like didn't speak or just would like just say gibberish or whatever. Yeah. Like, and because I sort of found early on that being physical is really what I like to do and what's easy for me. Like I'm not like there's some people that are really clever, like performers, and they can think of like the funniest thing to say at a given moment or whatever. And I was never the best at that. I got better at it, but I was very good at being physical and like creating the comedy through being physical. And I learned that from like watching some people there. And it took me a while to figure that out, because I would trying to figure out what kind of performer I was. And it takes a long time to really like a lot of reps and a lot of failing to really understand what kind of performer you are. And at this point now, like, for example, when I was doing this TV show, like, I'm realizing, like, oh shit, like, I really know how to make even the smallest thing. I know how to make it specific. And that's really what helps, what has yeah. helped me get close to book. Like, I've gotten close to booking a couple of things. Like, I almost booked a part as like a piece of shit from Boston on this like NBC show, Extended Family, yeah. like a guy that just like, basically they bring him in. He's like the ex of, I had like three lines of like an ex of like one of the leads. And I'm just like, hey, you know, like, hey, she still looks good. You know, yeah. whatever. Yeah. Like, but it's like, I just have this oh, I know what this guy feels like.
And yeah, exactly.
Like, you know how he holds his body, how the space he would take up in a room kind of.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and that's yeah. like, and that's what I don't know. That's sort of like what informs a lot of things. It feels weird to talk about, but yeah, a lot of it is physical and it's a feel. And then I'll write stuff around that or like what.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, of course this person would say that, or of course this person will wear that or whatever.
Yeah.
I think if you love, like, I just love, I truly really believe I live my life for these little moments that happen, or like that somebody does something that I'm like, oh, it just, you could never write it. You could never make that guy yeah. up from scratch. And like, I feel like, especially if you're from the Midwest, there's a lot of these kinds of people yeah. where you're just like, you have no idea why this is so funny, but I live life to be around a person like that, because you pick up on these little nuances that, like, you, it's just like, it's like eccentricities that exist amongst like regular people that when you can like drill in on them and make them big, you're like, everyone's experienced that type of person and yeah. can like, if you get to the core of it, it really is just, I think when you expand that, that's when things get so funny. And that's really like what, as soon as I saw that first video, I was like, oh my God, he's drilled in on this, like, such a specific guy that somehow is playing broad. But I know I can pick three of friends that I have growing up that are that human being.
Yeah.
It's just, dude, so good.
Yeah. And even like earlier, I just thought of another example. Speaking of like people's eccentricities, like I went to my wife's Mommy and Me class, because she's out of town, and I was like, just yep. to go. And before I went to a CVS, and as I was walking out, there was a guy that was walking in. He had a shirt that says, like, I do not deal with stupid people. Like, this guy, he had like
and you know, he's dumb as fuck.
Dude, he had like jean shorts, and then he had like these fucking, he had like a goatee and like these sunglasses. He was like bald.
Yeah. And I spent the next
10 minutes in the car just being like, I do not deal with stupid people. Yeah. Yeah. You come up to me and you're stupid, I'm saying, get out of here.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. If you're stupid, you better not be saying anything stupid to me. You know, yeah. like just. Yeah.
It's the idea of him struggling to find, to even express what he needs to say.
Yeah, I'm like, what do you, I just like this guy. I'm like, I'm going to do a video as this guy at some point. Like, just, yeah. I have to. But it's like, I just, that stuff I think is so funny. Like, I just feel like I know what that guy is like. And I've been around so many people like that. And it's like, I don't know. I just spent like 10 minutes just being like, man, and some next time a stupid person comes up to me, they're gonna get it, you know. And it's like, dude, what are you like? How many, like, this? I was like, I'm pretty sure if you're interacting with enough stupid people in a day where you wear a t-shirt, that's like, I think you are the actual stupid person.
Yeah,
everyone seems dumb to you. Like, there's no way that you are like so incredibly smart that every person you interact with is so dumb that it warrants you wearing a shirt. You know, that you like saw that shirt and you're like, oh my God, this is me.
This finally, is me. Yeah, yeah, finally, yeah. Someone produced enough.
Somebody made a t-shirt to what I'm going through, yeah. what I deal with every day. Like, somebody made a t-shirt with those words on it.
Thank God, because now I can express it without having to say
Thank
it.
Thank God.
It's just like, I mean, I think I'm going to assume you're similar with your interests. Is like, I really do feel like I grew up on like movies and TV and a lot of it being comedy. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially we're similar ages, and that was a real peak time for like that type of comedy as well. And I so badly, I loved movies so much that I've built my entire life out of like doing what you're describing, which is like seeing a funny person, like, oh, I know where they exist in a movie. You know what I mean? And then mm-hmm. being able to, I'm always so jealous of like, because I don't know how to write it. I don't know how to do anything with it. But you have, you see it and you're like, oh, I just, that guy's going to live with me for the next week. And yeah. I can't wait to, like, Chase is a person that thinks like me, and I'll be like, I can't wait to, I'll text him things that yeah. I see like this, where it's like, no one else is going to get this. No one else is going to build a world around this dummy, but I need it to happen. So yeah. I thank God for people like you all the time that someone was able to do the work to actually yeah. build
make it
out
tangible.
These,
and
yeah. Make it real.
Well, dude, and it's funny because like I'm speaking of like just building a world around like the stupidest thing. It's like I'm finishing up this like mockumentary about the like Mosh retirement guy.
Yeah, I want to talk about that.
And it's like it's I guess a good segue, but like I meant to send you clips before, but I just didn't get done in time because there's like not enough. I haven't got like color. I just got the final like sound mix back, but I haven't got like color correction back. But like I sometimes like the stupidest character, I'm like, I want to see the most of this character.
Yes.
Like I want to see like take it and like do the most with it. And I remember when I announced like the mockumentary, people were just like so many people were stoked, obviously, but then some people were like, what the fuck is this gonna be? This is so fucking stupid, blah 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 blah.
And oh my god, I have the exact opposite reaction to that. Dude,
I was like, this is like the whole point. They're like, this is so fucking super. I'm like, yes, I know. Like, it's going to be stupid. And I think that like, it is like, I think people are going to be surprised with how produced it is. It's like, I've been making stuff for a long time. So I knew how to like make a
sure
something that looks like good. And mm-hmm. I was good. Like we did, I got my friend Jordan that does that 2 minutes to late night thing.
Oh yeah.
He did like all original music for it, like all like hardcore songs.
Hell yeah.
Like he did like documentary, like it's kind of filmed like a true crime / like ESPN 30 for 30.
God, oh bro.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then my other buddy Mike, he did like an Enya ripoff song that we use like a lot.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, who can sit like yeah, that yeah, song yeah. we use a lot in it. So I there's like original, all the music is original. Like original hardcore songs. Like I went and recorded vocals on a hardcore like them yeah, with like, yeah. And I got like my friend, I got the actors that are in it to record vocals over yeah. it. Like this has been like, I had put so much work into this. Like I didn't have a kid when I started it, and now I have a kid, and like I've been like working on this since like August of last year. And I'm just like ready for it to be out because like, it's just been a thing that me and like 20 other people like have been watching and knowing about, basically like seeing. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I'm at the point now where I'm just like, I just need it to be done.
Sure.
But like, I'm really excited because it's like, I got like my friend, I pulled like favors. I got like people that are in bands and stuff to do like little bit, like testimonial parts or whatever. You know, I got like friends of mine that I knew that used to tour in bands that now act. It's like, everyone involved pretty much is involved in hardcore in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've like pulled favors and I've been working on this thing for so long. It's like, it is certainly a labor of love. I can't wait for it to be out.
Because, when does it come out?
It'll be out, I think, next month. As soon as I get the color back, because I'm not doing any film festivals, sure, like anything like that. I'm just like sick of that shit. Mm-hmm. Like most film festivals are like, unless you think you can go to it and like meet people, it's sort of a scam.
Yeah.
Because any of the main film festivals, like the big ones like Sundance or whatever, you pretty mm-hmm. much have to have like an agent or a manager submit things for you. And like, even though I have that now, because it's like crowdfunded and everything. And I feel like I owe it to people to just put it out as soon as possible and not like try to sell it or anything like that. Like, I'm just going to put it on YouTube with like a press release.
Dope.
And like I'm just going to get out as soon as possible. As soon as I can cut a trailer, I'm going to like send it to the crowdfunding people first. And then I'm just going to post it. And then, yeah, I'm going to try and put it out on near my birthday, which is like the 17th. So,
okay, cool.
If I'm basically just like, I need it done. I need it out.
I'm so excited. It's like, it's like you're saying, like to expand that character and just be able to see him doing other things is the best.
Yeah. Like he's got a day job. He works in HR. he, he just like, yeah, there's like all these different things about his life, like it, you've, you know, and then he's got like a best friend that's like a poser, and you know, they don't haven't talked in years, and like, yeah. It's just, yep. Like, yeah, there's like every, I mean, there's like a lot of butt rock involved in there. Like, mm-hmm. Butt rock is like sort of the enemy of, it's like the worst kind of music you could be into, yeah. You know, and so there's a lot of that in there. There's like, yeah, there's just so much in there that I just really, I really, my goal with it was like, I really just wanted to make a movie, like a short film. It's like 20 something minutes, like specifically about hardcore. And I don't know if anyone will be able to do it again. Like when I started doing like these videos and all these people follow me, I was like, this might be my only chance to make something like this.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. I was like, I just feel like it needs to exist in the world. So I just like, I have to make this. It might be the only chance ever. I don't know like if this will ever be able to happen again, but I have to try and make it. And I definitely didn't make enough from the crowdfunding to fund the whole thing. So I like had to go get like brand sponsors. Ended up like working with Grillo's Pickles. They gave me money for it.
Yeah, those are hardcore dudes, right?
Yes, and I worked with them on other stuff, social media wise too. So, and I've worked with I got PBR sponsored it as well.
Naturally,
Lambgoat is sponsoring some of it, and they're sponsoring like some ads on their site, and they did some other things for me with it. And then the merch company that I use, Overcast Merch, sponsored some of it. And so, dude, I've just been like, I've been wheeling and dealing to get the thing made.
As like hard as that is, it also feels like the best way to make a thing about hardcore, which is the way you would do that.
Seems
thing.
So true, yeah, true to the roots. Yeah,
dude, it's just like I mean, it is like DIY. Like, I mean, it's kind of the way I've always had to make things. I mean, I've always viewed like making any kind of short film or whatever. It's always like, I'm going to set out to do this thing, and I'm just going to make it happen. Like, I found that like, if I do whatever I can to make it happen, you can surprise yourself how far you can get. And there's many points where I was like, dude, I didn't make enough money to make this thing well. Like I'm done. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start asking people like brands and stuff, see if they want to donate, you know, or whatever in exchange for sponsorship. And I was like, I'm not going to give up until it's like, I'm just not going to give up. I'm not even going to consider the fact that I might not make it. Like, I'm going to make it. Like, I shot it knowing that I didn't have enough money to finish it. And I was like, I'm just going to have to, like, I was able to shoot it, but I didn't have enough money for post-production. Mm-hmm. So once we got it shot, I was like, all right, now I have to find the money to finish this thing. Otherwise it's just not going to get finished. Cause I can't, with a kid on the way, I can't justify spending like a couple $1,000 on like, you know, like a really good color grade, like color, like sound design, you know, getting people to record stuff, like So, you know, I just really set my mind to it to get it done.
I mean, I think that just makes it all that much cooler, honestly. Yeah. Like that whole, I mean, I think that even the way when we started this business, it was the same thing. It's like you just kind of assume, no, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it right. And I'm just going to keep motoring forward and not think about the rest of the stuff. Cause I just know, I think if you have like this idea of like, I know how it should be if it's going to exist and that's how I'm going to do it no matter what. That's the stuff that turns out the best.
Yes. No, I agree. I agree. And I think it's really cool. What I really like your guys' store. I mean,
thank you, man.
I mean, I'm like really into clothes and everything myself. So,
oh hell yeah.
I love vintage stuff, and I get a lot of stuff tailored. I'm like I'm just like
the way,
dude. Once I found out that you could just get things tailored, I'm like, what am I doing?
it's the most mind blowing thing that people like don't seem to know about. Like, dude, you can go buy vintage like high end clothing. When people ask me about suits and shit, I'm always just like, go buy something. You can go get something like that probably retailed in the thousands of dollars for a couple hundred, and then you put $50 into tailoring and it's perfect suit. It's,
dude,
that easy.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Like I got these like actually yesterday. I dropped off at the tailor. Like, I have these pair of vintage like. It's like a pair of vintage French waterproof camo, like,
oh my God,
swishy kind of pants from like, they're like, it's like army surplus.
Yeah.
And I dropped them off at tailoring to like, just get it like taken up, like just a couple inches. Cause they're just a little bit long. I've had them tailored before, but then like they kind of fucked it up. So they just made it too long. And I dropped those off, and then event like I got like at a at an estate sale in Virginia. I got I walked in, and this guy had like a whole closet. This old dude, I guess he must have died at that point, but he had like a whole closet full of like vintage like Dickies like workwear
Oh,
that had
whoa.
been like worn through, and it was like the shirts were like paper thin and soft, and like and I it was all my size, so I bought like a bunch of that stuff, and I dropped off like
Damn.
a couple Dickies like workwear shirts that, and I just got them like. Because the bottom was too long and it's like just straight cut all the way around, so it
Yeah.
just kind of looks weird. And so I dropped it off at the tailor to get it like a rounded cut, and then you know it goes up like higher to on your waist and then like
Yeah,
back
pass
down to
it.
the bottom. And then I just had it taken up a little bit. And yeah, I'm like obsessed with. I got like I have like a pair of painter's pants I wear all the time, like Stan Rae's that
Yeah.
yep. I got tailored in a little bit.
I used to work with them a long time ago. I had to go down to Crockett, Texas to buy out of their warehouse. They got taken over by some like maybe a Japanese company or something that like has like revitalized it, but that used to be just like this weird like surplus company that was technically closed but had military contracts and was
Yeah.
just still producing. It's this really wild story that this like crazy dude down in Texas was showing me. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, dude, it's I mean, I love Stan Rae's stuff. Like I've been like I want to get more of their pants 'cause I love the ones I wear all the time.
How gnarly is the band tee collection?
Dude, I don't even want to talk about it. It's like
Yep.
getting me in a lot of trouble at my house right now.
Yep. Are you still doing it, or is this like it's an excessive amount from before?
It's become excessive now. I mean, I've had a lot before, but it's become more excessive now because when I work with, if I do like a video for a record label or like a clothing company or something, like I'll have them send me stuff to like wear in it or whatever. And it's like I have like a video coming out for a record label that's done a lot of metal stuff. And so I had them send me like some records and some t-shirts or whatever. So it's like, it's not like I'm paying for the stuff. It just keeps arriving.
You're amassing.
Yeah, my wife is like, you have got to like get rid of this stuff. I was like, I don't know anyone that's an XL. Like, hear me. Like, all my friends are like larges or 2X or whatever. Like, small. And so I'm just amassing so much band shirts that it's like becoming a real problem, but I don't want to get rid of any of it. Like, so I've started doing other stuff. I've started trying to mix it up. Like, if I get like comfort color stuff, I'll get like a 2X instead of an XL and crop it a little bit. So I have more of like a boxy fit. And yeah, I just it's a problem for me. I have so much shit, and I have hats. I have like I have at least 100 hats. Just a lot of vintage stuff. Like there's a guy that I worked with, and he's like I met him on Instagram for a while, but he makes like custom hat. You send him like a jacket or whatever, you can make like a custom five panel from it.
Oh, wow. Oh,
Um,
word.
yeah, his name's like it's called like Nostalgic Anthropology
Cool.
is his page. Dude, I've worked with him so much. Like I bought like three hats from him. I sent him like a had like a pink vintage like LL Bean jacket that
Yeah.
like it was like ripped on the sides, and I was like, well, I'm not gonna fix the jacket. I'll just send it to him and he'll turn it into a hat. Send him like an old like a blue and black like Gore-Tex jacket, and he just made me like a five panel that it's like just says Gore-Tex on the front.
That's so
And
sick.
Tight.
yeah, and then I sent him an old NASCAR jacket, like a Winston Winters like
Yep.
cup jacket, and he made a five panel out of it. But I think I wore the five panel in this video I did for Days Records and Pain of Truth's new record.
Oh, yeah.
But dude, yeah, I'm like I have so much band stuff, and I really like clothes a lot. But I don't
Yeah.
really feel like I spend that much on it. I mean, you know, if you really know what you want and you like and you're into tailoring, it's like, dude, I can find a pair of like vintage pants like on eBay for like $30, and then I'll throw like $40 in tailoring on it, and then it's like, all right, well now this pants fit perfectly,
Yeah, it's like
and
custom. Yeah.
yeah, you get compliments on it all the time.
Yeah,
Yeah, let's
it's
go.
crazy like how much of that unlocks when people get into it. That's like you can you if you know what you're looking for. I mean, you have to know what you're looking for. I think that's the key because it's too vast otherwise. But if you know what you're looking for and you got a good tailor that gets you and you know how to talk to him, it's like it unlocks a very big world of stuff where you don't have to spend a shitload of money on clothes to have like super cool stuff.
Dude, yeah. I mean, it's like I think the most of I've spent like I bought like a pair of rod. I have like a pair of like 316 like denim, and then that's like the most expensive thing. That's the thing I've spent the most money on. Like immediately, other stuff I've spent money to get tailored, but it's like it really if you know what you're looking for, it really does not cost that much to, like, you know, put together things that fit your body well. But you do have to know what you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's really the key. But if you got your inspro and all that shit, you can it's doable. You can find all. I mean, it's just like I still look to this day, like, as much as I like, like, you know, Japanese and selvedge denim and all this stuff, I really like just like old Levi's, and I just tailor them myself and I just fix them all up, and then I'm like, all right, they fit me perfect now. I don't have to worry about them, and then they look beat up just the way I want them to, and it's like it works out great.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Well, I have one other question that I was curious about is actually when things started to blow up with the Mosh videos, did you have anybody like big reach out to you that you were surprised to hear from? Because that had to have gotten around to a lot of specific people.
I don't want to say who it is, but I had a guy who like manages a lot of like big, like he's not in the hardcore world, but he likes the music.
Yeah.
He like manages a lot of like street artists. It's kind of hard to explain. Yeah. Like he doesn't manage these people, but it's like the people, like it'd be like if someone worked on like Kanye West's whatever Yeezus merch and that kind of stuff, or like managing like the visual stuff for that kind of thing. That's not what that person does. But it's like he does that for other people that recognize. And so he contacted me and we just DM'd a little bit. And then really it's just been cool to connect with people in bands that I've really liked a lot.
That's what I figured. Yeah.
And then I've able to like just pull some of those favors, you know. And I met like Toby Morris was one of the first people to like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
He shared. And so I did his podcast and then it was cool to meet him. And, you know, I've met a lot of cool people from it, and yeah, dude, it's weird. I mean, I've been doing it for a while now, and I don't know, honestly forgot what I was going to say, but
you're all right, man.
I don't know. I mostly just a lot of it was just been people in bands that I've not like people that are just in hardcore bands that I like a lot that I've worked with that I've been able to work with and stuff, which is cool, and that's mostly what I. What's been exciting for me, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so cool, man. Like I said, just to take something like that was able to, you're able to resonate with so many people, even though it's as niche as it is, like the fact that can happen with social media and stuff now, I just think is so cool. And then it like, you know, it's uncovered this whole thing, because I think, you know, the stuff that you were working on, obviously it takes, especially now knowing it was written too, I just think that like it's obviously already started to open up all these awesome doors to, you know, to like for you able to continue like writing all these different characters. And I'm super hyped for it.
So cool. Congrats on the TV too. I can't wait until we can
You know, I'll tell you what it is once we're not recording.
Okay. All right, cool, man. Well, we'll wrap this up, because I don't want to keep you. I'm sure you got a lot to do with a kid and everything going on, but really appreciate you coming on, man. We've been wanting to do it forever since we first saw the video. I'm like, we got to try to get in touch with him. So it's really cool, man. I appreciate you doing it.
Thanks for sending me shirts a while back. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, of course, man. Yeah, of course. All right, man. Well, we'll stay in touch, because I can't wait to see what you do next, man. I really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah.